Okay. Good morning, everybody. Sure do appreciate all of you making it out. Especially glad to see some visitors. Some of you folks I recognize, but don't recall your name. So yeah, stick around. We've got a few refreshments back here. So yeah, stick around. We'll have a break in between the 10 and 11 o'clock sessions. But yeah, feel free to make your way back there and get some snacks. So I am going to introduce our speaker, Drake Jenkins. So as many of you know, Drake is from Tennessee. His wife, Stokely, and him, they live in Clarksville, Tennessee. And they've got two girls, Lakin, who's almost 8, and Sadie, who is 5. Drake is a Freed Hardeman graduate. And he's a professor down there. He teaches Bible at Freed Hardeman. He also teaches at Lipscomb, teaches social science there. So anyways, without any further ado, I will turn it over to Drake.
All right. Thanks. Okay. Well, glad that you're here. And a lot to tell you in a little bit of time. Is this too loud? Am I echoing? I'm not. Okay. Okay, it's fine. If my wife were here, she would have said yes, so there you go. All right, so let me say a few ground rules that might help just a little bit. First off, I am no expert, and so please don't assume that. Second off, a lot of what I share is what most of you could share, and so I'm also mindful of that. I am inadequate to do the things that I get to do, but I'm humbled and thankful that we took on a project a few years ago. And we get to speak all over the country now, and it's kind of bizarre. And a lot of things that I've heard is, you know, you say stuff that we know, we just sometimes need to rehear it. So if you're looking for, you know, when Drake leaves today, we're going to know exactly how to view the church through an appropriate lens. I hope you will. I really do. But also, I hope that you're just encouraged to kind of reconsider some things. Another rule, some of the things that I'll say are me saying from an eyewitness observer. And it's not getting on anybody. It's just I report on things that I see. I'm a researcher at heart. And so part of the reason I think you brought me in here is to respond to things that I've seen. And so I will just randomly drop those things in. Do anything you want with them. It does not matter to me. But again, that's what my life's work has been about, essentially. And so be mindful of that. Number three, I love the church more than anything else. She has done more for me than anything. And so I'm thankful to belong to her. I'm thankful to belong to Jesus. I've preached for the last 15 years, and a lot of what I'm going to share with you today is stuff that we've been able to do. And so that's unique. I know how to shrink a church, and I know how to grow a church, and I've done both. That's how I know. Okay, I'm not an expert. I just know how to do things wrong and a few things right. So all that said, today we're going to talk about the visitor's view. And you don't know me. Some of you are here today because you thought Dale was coming. Sorry. He's not. Let me tell you who I am. I'm Dale's nephew, and Jeff's nephew. Some of y'all know Jeff and Dale and the Jenkins Institute, and so that's fine. Love those men so dearly. Their baby sister is my mama. That's how I'm in the Jenkins family. And so someone even brought up Jerry and Mamie from Birmingham. That's my mama and papa, or what was my mama and papa. Those two people raised me. I grew up with them in their home, and a mom and my twin brother, and we have an older brother that's 9 months older than us. And so I know the faces every time I say that. All right, but that's real. So, all right, so I've been doing ministry and seen ministry done most of my life. And I've always wondered, essentially, why do some churches do well? And by well, you have to define some of these terms. Because if a church is 50 people forever, but they all love the Lord, that could fall into some parameter of well, right? I mean, you could define that in some particular parameter. They're not serving heresy, so to speak, and so that's fine, that's good. Well is a conversation piece regarding like health, and so that's good. If a church went from 50 to 300, a lot of people would say they're doing well, and so that's fine too, but you need to define that parameter too. And so how do we take all of what we see and sort of put it into this one question, and that is, how do we change the world? Because I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm a world changer. And so I want you to be world changers. And so how do we do that? And the question is, you have to begin with where you are. What am I doing right now, or what am I not doing right now that may help me or hurt me from changing the world? And so all of us have to do that. And it's so much more than just a church thing. And what I think, and I could be wrong about this, though 85% of individuals that attend a church could not argue why they do the things that they do within that church. And that's a real number, 85%. That is to say, if I were to say something simple as, you know, why are we a cappella? It's bizarre to me that a lot of people would simply say, because the Bible says to be. Well, that's a fair answer, but you need to be able to back that up. There's seven times in the New Testament that the Bible speaks about singing. All seven times it gives attention to a cappella, but you need to be able to back up the scriptures if you can't, aside from when my preacher said that instruments are of the devil. Well, they're not. I play guitar. I just don't do it in a worship assembly. So to say we don't believe in instruments is a poor response, because if you don't believe in instruments, I promise they're real. Okay, and so you have to sort of unpack why we do what we do, and that's important, or you're a part of the 85% that sits in the room and complains about everything that there is. And you don't want to be that person. I mean, you don't want to be the problem in every solution. So that's a part of it. And everything that you do is seen by someone, and that's the part of it. Everything that you do is seen by someone. And so when I started this research, and again, I'm an inadequate individual. I went to Fried Hardeman, got a degree in Bible, I got my master's in Bible, and then got a PhD in social sciences. And my whole life, my work has essentially been for the last 3 years regarding my terminal degree, what do people see when they walk in? What do we see when people walk in? And it's bizarre, the answer to those questions. It's bizarre now, what are people looking for? And it's challenging to unpack that. It's hard to know that 35% of millennials will not enter into a building that has a steeple. That's hard to know. It's just hard to know. It's not bad. It's not good. It's just something that you can know. Why? Because they assume that has some connection to traditionalism, and traditionalism has some connection to this this sort of authoritarian orality. And people don't like that in that small particular group. And so you need to be mindful of that. I'm not telling you to go get a chain and knock your building down. I'm just saying there are some things that are hard to know. Every time I pull into a building, I always circle the building just to see what I don't see. And so we're going to unpack some of that in the second second lecture of this. But there are already some things that I might say as just a random human that visited your building, what you might consider. Okay, but before we do anything else, I want us to first understand what is communication. Because again, this is what my background is in. So what I did over the last 3 years is I toured the top 10 largest churches and fastest growing churches in America. And this was the parameters of my study, okay? And this was exciting, but you need to know a couple of things about this, okay? First off, there's statistics all over the place that define what's the biggest, what's the largest, what's the most producing, what's the most reproducing, et cetera, et cetera. And so my board that we set down when you have to defend, we set down, and that was the parameter. Number one, we're not going to do international, though the largest churches are not actually in America. Congregation bodies are not in America, and that's intriguing. Okay, but we're going to do America, and they have to be fastest growing, and they have to be the largest. They have to be both of those. And so we're going to look at 10 of those, and we went all over the country. And the way that this was, it was sort of a qualitative research, this observation moment, so to speak. So we didn't do a ton of interviews. We did some, but the major part of it was walking into these rooms and writing down, based on some criteria, what we saw or what we didn't see. And it was really telling. And one of the things that I learned was this: there's not a Church of Christ in the top 10 fastest growing largest churches in America. There's not a Church of Christ in the top 100 fastest growing largest churches in America.
There's not a Church of Christ in the top 1,000 fastest growing and largest churches in America. That was problematic to me, and so we're going to build one, and we're going to be on that list. That's my goal. That's my 10-year goal, is to be on the top 10 list. I have weird goals, but I think we'll do it, because I know we will. Okay, so there. All right, so why is that? Well, that's something to consider, but let's go in and step into these congregations and see what they're doing. Now, I always like to say this, and some churches need me to say this, some audiences need me to say this, some audiences could care less. I was there as a researcher, not as a worshiper, and I just hope you hear that appropriately, okay? So I was there to see what was happening, and it was unique, and what we're learning is people show up to churches primarily because of communication, and that's true across all social science boards. If people stay in marriages or walk away from marriages for communication. Y'all all know that, right? What is the biggest struggle in marriage? We have to talk to each other. Okay, well, that's true, right? And there's two people, so you have to be mindful of that. And so the reason people stay together is because they communicate well. The reason people don't is because they negated that concept, right? Same with businesses, customer service. The reason companies do really well is because they understand how to communicate with customer service. Last night I flew in pretty late and I was trying to get my rental car and they somehow canceled my appointment. And I said, well, that's a real bummer because I live not here. And so they said, well, what do you want us to do about that? That was what they asked me. Now, again, as a researcher, I'm always thinking, like, how would I have responded? And at 10:30 at night, I wouldn't have looked at someone and said, well, what do you want me to do? And so I responded with, I'd like the fanciest car you have, because that is what I wanted. And so they said no, and I tried to laugh, and it was only me laughing, like most of the time. And so I said, look, I don't know how we solve this, but I'm trying to get to a hotel that's 15 minutes from here so we can get a car. I don't mind jumping in with you. What car do you drive? And again, just one person laughing. Okay, and so we unpacked it, and I said, do you have a manager? And I'm smiling, and I'm trying to be playful, and because it's a long day. And, you know, after long days, you're more frustrated, and they didn't have food on the plane because there was turbulence, and that was a real bummer. And the lady next to me was scared to death, and, you know, God help her, but she didn't want to talk, and, you know, I like talking to people, and that was a bummer. And so I'm sort of, and I don't have my family, and that's a bummer. And so So I said, can I speak to your manager? And the manager came out, and you could tell that the manager knew how to handle these situations. And he came out smiling, and he said, he looked at the screen, and he said, Mr. Jenkins, we've canceled your reservation. It's on us. It's not on you. And instantly, you know how I felt? I didn't care about not having the car, because they validated me. I could care less. I would have walked to this church with a smile, because he saw me. He didn't see some random person or some client or something. He saw me. And that's what we have to do if we're going to grow. We have to see them. Not what they were, not what you want them to be, what they are. Because every person that walks into every situation has a story. And your job is to see them. Right? Your job is to see them. And most of the time, people walk into churches because other people or other places are unwilling and unable to. And so, communication, what is it? Well, from a scholarship position, if you were to define communication, it's elusive. And that's not fair. And so you could look up right now, there are, in periodical searches, 100 known and validated definitions of communication. 100. That's a lot. That's like, what? Okay, and so thus the being elusive. And so what I did was I came up with a definition that I think might help us just a little bit. And so I want you to think about this, especially as we go through all of these lectures. I want you to hang on to what this particular definition is, because again, if we can learn what this is, then I think we can sort of begin to unpack how we move forward to growth. So, this is why I wanted a board. By the way, I have a PhD, but I can't spell, and so this is where you turn the live stream off. JK. All right, communication is a systemic process. Man, that's key, yeah? Let's start there. Okay, it is a systemic process. Now, what in the world does that mean? Well, It's elusive, and so there's 100 ways to describe this, but one of the things you have to be mindful of, is this, okay? Because this is what tells you what this means. So, if I'm unpacking this in a lecture, then I need to understand, okay, if this is a way to integrate or to interpret, that's what this word means, right? And the rest of it is integration, right? And interpretation. And that's hard because interpretation has its own sort of ambiguity, right? I mean, that's interpretation at its core. You can't help but to interpret individuals and aesthetics and responses. I mean, it's its own ambiguity, and so you need to be mindful that just because you think you're doing something doesn't necessarily mean you're doing it. Just because you're saying something doesn't necessarily mean you're saying it, and that's the hard part about this. And so bear with us. So communication is systemic, and so what is the system then? That's all that means. What is the system then of this process or of this interpretation? As it alludes to this, the communication aspect. And the system is simply you. And so, well, great, what does that mean? Well, it means that every time you come to the table, each of you come with your own what? System. And no system is the same. And so let's make this simplistic. How many of you in this room go to church here? This is your church home, by show of hands. Okay, many of you. Okay, how many of you believe the exact same thing about everything? Okay, well, that's not good. You should all leave. Okay, so that's the point, right? The point is you can be in the same, you can inhabit it. You can be in the same culture. You can be in the same place. You can be in the same sort of sphere of influence. You can be in the same ideology approach, but your systems are always going to be the same. And if your systems are going to be the same, then the process is going to struggle getting to this integration and interpretation. Does that make sense to y'all? And so how do you deal with that? Well, you have to learn the system. There was a Russian linguist, Bakhtang, B-A-K-T-A-I-N, Bakhtang, and he was bizarre. He was brilliant, but all brilliant people are also typically crazy. And so that's just true. I mean, read Einstein's notes, and it's like, really? Okay, so bear with us. But Dr. Bakhtang, this Russian linguist, said the biggest struggle with growing any organization is what he called the already spokens that come with every system. And this is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It truly is. And I'm going to write that on the board. The already spokens. Okay, and some of you are like, I wish he had a PowerPoint so we didn't have to look at this. But this is more engaging, I think. And I'm the speaker, so I get to do it this way. All right, So already spokens, and what does that mean? Now, this is the hard part, y'all, so I want you to hear this. Every time you encounter someone, they have individual interpretive ambiguity, but they also have this integrated connection through something that's already happened. And it's not always singular. And that's unfair, but it's absolutely true. It's like, what does that mean? This is what it means. Have you ever had a conversation with an individual, let's say in Springfield, Missouri? That's where we're at, right? Springfield, Missouri. And you mention something about where you go to church, because you always talk about the church, because you love it, because it's the greatest. I mean, the church is the greatest thing in the world. I love it so much. And so you can't help but to talk about things that you love, right? And so that's why when you walked in here, nobody talked about March Madness. You all talked about Jesus. And so if you didn't, you need to come forward as together we... No, I'm just playing. But the idea is you do. And so you're talking to someone outside of this wall, and they say, where do you go to church? And you say, well, I go to the Church of Christ. Have you ever had someone sort of say, uh-oh? Now, why are they doing that? Because of the already spokens. It has nothing to do with you. They probably love you. But the problem is they're interpreting what the church is based on already spokens in their system, and it takes one person to ruin the whole system, doesn't it? And that's unfair, but that's true. And so, like it or not, how are you going to deal with that? I mean, how are you going to solve that riddle? And I'll tell you this, you're not going to solve it by talking about how bad other people in other churches are. Shame on us for talking about how bad everything is as opposed to telling people how great Jesus is. Shame on us. And by the way, shame on us when we speak poorly of our own church. Well, you know, we want you to come today and, you know, our pews are not all that comfortable, but we still want you to come. Well, you know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to come. Well, we want you to come. Our song service is, it's okay, and sometimes the PowerPoint people are a slide behind, but it's not bad singing. I'm not coming to that church. Our preacher's, he's fine. I mean, we still pay him and all. I'm not showing up for that. Does that make sense? If you don't build a system and build something, this integration, this already spoken, this that is somewhat sustainable inside of the people that are not yet here, they're never going to come. And so you have to be mindful of that all the time. What am I saying that is going to get people excited about being a part of what I'm excited about being a part of what I'm a part of? And this is true in Christianity, but it's absolutely true in building churches. And what I've learned is we're terrible at this. And I mean that respectfully, but we are awful at this. We would rather, when people come, talk about what we need more of or what the church is doing down the road than talk about what we are. And it's going to kill us. It's going to hurt the church. I don't know if you live in statistics, but the churches of Christ statistically in the West right now are the second fastest dying religion. Now, I won't say what the first one is because I'm not here to blab on people, but we're number two and we're pretty close to number one. And I don't know why that is, but I think a big part of it is this already spoken concept. I'll never forget, this is a terrible story, so let me share it. I was preaching in Ashland City, Tennessee, and it's a small town right outside of Nashville. And it was my first job ever. I was 23 years old, and all I wanted to do was preach. It's all I've ever wanted to do. And so I was working, and I was in grad school. I was working with a guy named Dan Winkler, and I was begging him to get me a job, because if he called them, they had to say yes. And if you know Dan Winkler, you know that's true. And he wanted me to do it, and he loved me through it and prayed me through it, but you got to do it. So I applied to all these churches, and at one point, I applied to 18 churches, and 18 churches told me no. Three of the churches offered me the youth minister job. I still don't know how that happened. I didn't apply for that job. But they said, no, you're too young. We want someone experienced, and that's fine. And so I prayed for them and asked them to receive Jesus, and then I went on my own. All right, the only reason I ended up in Ashland City is because they're the only people that said yes. And they know that. I spent 10 years with that church. But I remember the Church of Christ had a bad reputation in that town, a very poor reputation. A small town outside of Nashville, but, you know, 15 minutes from downtown Nashville, but the town had 3,000 people, one of those type places. And I couldn't figure out why. And there was a church, one week we were at this place called Don Poncho's. And you know every small town has incredible Mexican food. That's just true. They have to. It's in the Bible. And so we went to Don Poncho's, and I watched this guy walk in, this gentleman, and he was going to all the tables and dropping off a card. Just didn't say a word to the table, just dropped a card off. And I thought, well, that's one way to market. I wonder what he's selling. And then he got to our table, and he dropped the card off. And I was so excited because I'm always trying to find a way to reach people. And so before he got away, I said, hi, I'm Drake Jenkins. And he said, hello. And he walked off. And I said, what are you doing? Tell me, what are you passing out? And this is what he said. I'm trying to save Ashland City. And I said, well, I'm trying to do that. Let's talk. And He didn't want to talk, and so he walked off. And so I thought, well, okay. So I looked at the card. This is a true story. And the back of the card that I saw, the first part, said, "Turn or burn." And I thought, is that a reference to the food I'm about to eat? And on the back of it, it said, "Church of Christ salutes you." And there was no church of, there was no, it was just Church of Christ. Well, I preach for Ashland City Church of Christ. So I hated that. You know what I did? I went to every table in that restaurant. I picked up those cards. And I sat down with as many people that would. Because not everybody likes for you just to join their dinner. Some people like it. Not everyone do. Now, usually after 2 minutes, they think I'm crazy or they're playful, you know. And I tried to not hurt that gentleman's feelings. Because maybe in his mind, he was changing the world. But he was doing it terribly. What a poor job. And he was setting this up for me to fail in Ashland City. And I didn't want that to happen. And so I sat down and I always ask the question, when you read Turn or Burn, what did that mean to you? And do you know what most people said? This is a lecture, but let's do this for the sake. Because of the card Turn or Burn and the Church of Christ represented on the back. And I said, what did that mean to you? Anybody, what do you think someone said to that? Anybody? Huh? That's what it was. Well, that's what the Church of Christ teaches. And they were flippant and rolled their eyes at it. It was almost in jest. Well, I mean, that's what y'all do. And I thought, I don't do that. Like, what? And most of these people began to give me the history of Churches of Christ in their ideology and in their ambiguity and their integration of, well, that's the church in town that basically hates everybody. I don't hate people. Do you? I want people to go to heaven, but I sure don't want them to think I'm the one getting them there. And so I printed up my own set of cards, and I put Turn or Burn, and on the back I put First Baptist. No, I'm just playing. I did that. That would have been pretty funny, though. But all the names of the churches that weren't us. No, I began to sit down and talk to these people. I want you to tell me what you think about the Church of Christ. Are you willing to have lunch with me next week? You don't have to come to church. If you want to come to church, I preach just up the road, but can I have lunch with you? And I set up lunch appointments with everybody that agreed. And all we did, I let them tell me their view of the Church of Christ. And it was awful. Some of the people had left the Churches of Christ. And the number one reason was, well, because they're just a terrible, cold group of people. And so I thought, I need to figure out a way to change that. I was only 23, 24 at the time. And I'm not saying that's true about every Church of Christ. I'm saying that's true about a small town of 3,000 people just north of Nashville. But I wondered if there were other people across the country that sort of felt that way. Do they see us in a way that is not us at all? We're the light of the world, right? I mean, we're a city set on a hill. And so are we sharing that? And so every time someone comes into your life, every time a visitor comes into your view, your sphere of influence, your building, let's say, they come with a system. And so you have to be mindful of that system. And your job is, again, not to necessarily unpack that. And that's what most of us do. You know, when someone walks in, well, hey, are you new here? I love every one of you already. And some of you may not love me yet, but you will. Hopefully. But can I caution you not to say that when people walk in? Are you new here? I know that's an intro. I hear that. But that can go one of two ways. Number one, they're not ready to tell you their story because they are new. Or number two, no, we've been here for 5 years. Okay, and that's just a real tough. And if any of you are shaking your heads, that means you've done that before. I babysit your kids. Oh, yeah, I remember you. Okay, so be mindful. So that's not what you say. The first thing that you say is you think about the system. You try to see them past any words, past anything that they're doing. You try to see them past all of the aesthetics. Did you know that there's a lot of single moms that will come into churches with kids? Or, you know, maybe they have a husband, but he's working or he's not coming or whatever. But when you look at the statistics, there are more single moms coming with kids than single dads coming with kids. And so that's intriguing. And so when you see that person, what system do you see? Hey, are you new here? Oh, my word, how did you hear about us? They don't need to hear that. You know why? because they've spent the last hour begging their kids to put on shoes and clothes and reshoes and reclothes. And did you eat? No. Well, don't tell anybody you didn't eat. And did you brush your teeth? No. Well, eat this mint because I don't want us to be the smelly kids. And did y'all buckle in and stop hating each other? And it's crazy and wild and screaming. And as soon as you get in the parking lot, and it is a nightmare, the mom looks at the kids and says, everybody just shut up and act like you love each other. How are you doing? Oh, we're doing wonderfully today. Godspeed, okay? Because they feel they need to do that when they walk into this building. You know why? Because that's the system we built. When you walk in here, you get it together and you look like you have it together. You know what they need? Your kids look amazing. Did you do this today by yourself? Yeah. Well, why are there tears in your eyes? Well, my husband doesn't help a lot. And I know I shouldn't even unpack this. You should unpack this. You want to go into this room over here and talk? We don't know you. Do you mind if I let this lady over here, this gentleman, take your kids? We have a Bible class program. I promise they'll love it. They'll do crafts. You can go with them. That's fine. But maybe mom could use a break just to talk a little bit. Hey, could I bring you some water or coffee, or do you need anything? Okay, you sit in that room for a few minutes and just catch your breath. I'm going to make sure your kids are okay, and let's talk. And when you go in there, you just sit. You don't have to say anything because you know what you've just done? This says, this church loves me, and they don't even know me. This church sees me more than the people that I see every day. This church wants me here. They don't know what your beliefs are. They don't know if you're instrumental or a cappella. They don't know if you have a praise team or if you think that's wrong or right. They don't know if you clap at baptisms or not. They know that you see someone that needs them and that you run to their call. You think you can grow a church like that? I do. You think when the people came to the camps on the Outer Banks and they saw all of these apostles preaching, you think the first thing they said was, now are you a Jew or a proselyte Jew? Now, tell me your thoughts on the Holy Spirit. No, they saw a group of people that saw them. And if you want to grow the church, which I know you do, I know you do. I mean, I don't know anything about this church yet. I'm imagining on Sunday morning there won't be, y'all have to bring chairs in because this place is packed. But if it's not, are you willing to do something more? Are you willing to do what it takes to break this already spoken and to build a system so that you can integrate with people? Are you willing to go the extra mile? Are you willing to do what others are unwilling to do? Now, we're up against the 10:45. We're going to take a quick break, whatever break you may need, and then we're going to start back around 11. I'm going to say a prayer, but I always want to say this as we sort of break down. Keep this in mind. I'll erase some of this, but I want you to keep this in mind as we get into the next lecture, because I hope you understand at least what communication is at this point. It is a systemic system process of everybody coming to the table with a different system, and I must work through that if I'm going to integrate, which seemingly I want to, even though there is ambiguity, and even though there is already spokens, because I'm trying to build something great. And to do that, I need to make sure we're on the same playing field. Now, that's some of the scholarship, academic side of it, if I may. The next lecture in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about pragmatism and how to do that. And that's the point where I might even offer suggestions for this place and in a very humble way. And I'm always willing to take suggestions. If you think I need to wear better shoes, feel free to come tell me, and I'll consider ignoring you. But whatever it takes, but we're going to work through what that may mean, and I hope it'll do some good. So let's have a prayer. God, we're thankful for this first session. We're thankful for the opportunity to probably hear things we've always heard,
But maybe we'll do something about it. Maybe I can be better, God. I want to be better for you. I want to see beyond what I've always seen. I want to look for things beyond what I've always looked for. I want to see people. And part of seeing people is seeing their systems and their processes. I want to learn people. And God, my prayer is that all of us in this room, regardless of where we land on some of this, is that maybe this will help us. Maybe this will light a fire in us to at least be mindful that everybody that walks into our lives are coming with so much more than just a smile. And help us to appreciate that, and help us in sometimes to be mindful when we were in our own valleys and our own deep dark systems and someone reached out and help that to sort of spread over into our life. God, help us to not do this because we want to be the best church or the biggest church, but we want to do this because we love people. And God, get us out of the way if we stop loving people. I pray that leaders in churches and speakers in churches, and that if they're not in it for the people, I pray that you get them out of the way. There is an urgency and emergency for soul winning, and people that aren't in it for loving people and loving you, I pray you put a guard over their mouth and help us to get back to the people business. God, I love you, and I know you love us. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's take a short break.